The following program is a presentation of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction.
Aye, mateys, 'tis a long while ago that pirates pulled pearls from Davy Jones's locker. And since that day, their worth has been a sinking, 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 sinking. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what's it, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? We're laughing here because of my terrible pirate impersonation. I'm David Bluestein.
And I'm Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio.
We're here each Saturday morning at 7 o'clock to provide an insider's view on the world of jewelry, coins, antiques, collectibles, and much, much more. As owners and operators of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction, we're on the front line with a finger on the pulse of these markets every single day. As of right now, you have a friend in the business. I promise I'm done with the pirate impersonation. But yeah, pirates do not find pearls anymore, the same way that Indians don't hunt buffaloes anymore. Where do pearls come from? What are they worth? You'll find out today from San Antonio's gemologist, Rudy Pena from Pena & Associates. Also today on our Insider Report, you'll get the inside story on what's wrong with Craigslist. Don't get me started, but I will get started in just a few minutes. But first, what a week. Things are really cooking at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio up in Stone Oak. We got a call from our friend Barry Harris today, owner of Amanda's Fine Gifts. We did a closeout for Barry when he shut down his business of over 30 years, one of San Antonio's premier high-end porcelain and pewter retailers. And we thought that Barry was done. We thought he was ready to retire and go on a cruise and have breakfast at Jim's every morning. But we got a call from Barry last week. He says, come and get the rest of it. It turns out he's got a storage unit.
They're never done. They always got a lot more.
There's always more. People say, well, this is it. Say, no, it's not. We'll see you again. Also, we are in negotiations with representatives of one of the country's largest chain of pawn shops to help liquidate their surplus jewelry and coins, as we already do for a lot of the larger gold-buying chains in the area. That's where so much of this estate Tiffany and James Avery jewelry is coming from, in addition to what we get from private parties just like you at home. We work for retailers and wholesalers and manufacturers and for private parties to move unwanted valuables quickly and easily. We figure that you're either a buyer or you're a seller or a buyer and a seller. You know, Google us. I mean, I don't want to do one big long infomercial here. Google Jewelry Exchange and Auction for complete information about what we do and how you can participate as a buyer, as a seller, or as a buyer and a seller. But first, before we jump into this show, as we do every week, let's do the trivia quiz. It's the In the Money trivia quiz, the quiz where you win the answer. First, let's review last week's quiz. Adam?
All right. Last week, I asked, I said, pearls have been a symbol of beauty and elegance for centuries. Aw. They are graded according to their luster, color, shape, size, nacre, surface texture, and how well they match their neighboring pearls. Depending on the grade, the value of a pearl can be anywhere from a few cents to thousands of dollars. We're going to talk about all this in just probably about a half hour. Very few of the pearls used in jewelry are found in nature. Almost all of them are farmed from mollusks that have been implanted with beads or tissue. Most of these farmed pearls are grown in China. And the question was, what type of pearl was first farmed in Japan? And there was a little bit of debate about this, but the answer that we're looking for this week was Akoya pearls. This week's winner was Gloria Snyder. The prize is an 18-inch strand of Akoya pearls with a 14-karat gold clasp. Gloria, please come to the Jewelry Exchange and Auction Gallery at 19903 Stone Oak Parkway within the next 30 days to claim your prize. Our gallery is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday evenings for our live auction. For more information, click the Contact Us tab on our website at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. And David has a new question for us this week.
I guess I might be semi-famous for being kind of long-winded, giving a little lesson and then asking a question. But this week, short and sweet. Bea Benaderet played George and Gracie's neighbor, Blanche Morton, on The Burns and Allen Show. She also played Jethro's mother on The Beverly Hillbillies. On the show The Beverly Hillbillies, what was her character's first and last name? That's it. To be a winner, all you have to do is to be one of the first three people to email the correct answer to quiz@inthemoneyradio.com, quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. You can submit your answer directly from our homepage at www.inthemoneyradio.com. Then listen next week if we read your name. Just come up to our gallery on Stone Oak Parkway within the next 30 days and claim your prize. Only one winner per household per month. And remember that email address, quiz@inthemoneyradio.com, quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. Good luck. Now, we're going to be back in just a minute with What's Wrong with Craigslist, but first, a short commercial break.
Hi, this is Adam from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio, introducing our weekday James Avery Auctions with 1,000 pieces of estate James Avery jewelry sold to the highest bidder with no minimums or reserves. New and retired designs at up to 80% off. This is a perfect opportunity to stock up on hard-to-find pieces. It's easy to register and bid online right now at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. Auctions start every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evening at 7 o'clock. Also join us each Saturday at 7 p.m. for our live auctions in Stone Oak, featuring even more designer jewelry from Rolex, Tiffany, Pandora, John Hardy, David Yurman, and more, all guaranteed to be authentic. It's all happening at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction, Texas License Number 16604, Member Better Business Bureau. Visit jewelryexchangeandauction.com and join us every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for In the Money right here on KLUP. James Avery is a registered trademark of James Avery Craftsman Incorporated.
You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Our guest today will be Rudy Pena from Pena & Associates, and we're going to do a presentation we call Pirates and Pearls. But first, we want to talk about what's wrong with Craigslist. We did a show a few months ago called What's Wrong with eBay. Our guest was Carrie McCorkle, an eBay power seller, and we talked all about it, some of the positives and some of the negatives about eBay. And in fact, you can listen to that show on a podcast or a webcast from our In the Money Radio homepage at www.inthemoneyradio.com. All of our shows are there. More and more people come into our gallery and ask us some basic questions. We always answer your questions. We are teachers at heart, as someone just told me yesterday. But the whole presentation right there for you to hear on all of these different subjects that we talk about here on In the Money. What's wrong with Craigslist? You know what Craigslist is? And help me, Adam, if you think I don't explain it correctly. It's really kind of an open source website for anybody who wants to buy something or sell something or a job. They're looking for jobs or have jobs. And anybody can go on and pretty much say anything they want to, and therein lies the rub.
I've bought and sold vehicles on Craigslist. I've found apartments for rent. I've found jobs and hired people from Craigslist. It's a great resource.
And it is a great resource, but I was looking for the guy's name who said this, because I had this phrase in my mind my whole life, and it turns out some guy named Acton. I thought maybe it would be Ben Franklin or Thomas Edison, but some guy named Acton, some historian. I had to look it up, but I know this phrase, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And another applicable thought before I tell you what in the world I'm talking about, that I heard this once too, that anyone who believes in the fundamental decency of human beings has never watched children on the playground. I think there's some wisdom there. You know, completely unregulated, and not that I'm for regulation, don't get me wrong, but here's Craigslist, where basically any jackass can post whatever he wants, and any jackass can flag whatever he wants. Flagging on Craigslist means I don't like what I'm reading, so I'm going to click this button, and for the most part, it makes that post go away. And so anybody can post what they want. Anybody can flag what they want. It's funny, a prominent San Antonio jeweler called us about a month ago, and he said, look, this is silly. I'll stop flagging you on Craigslist if you stop flagging me on Craigslist. And frankly, we didn't really know what he's talking about. I said, gee, if I had the time to sit around and look at what you were posting on Craigslist and then flag it, I'd be worried about my business. I don't have time to do that.
Yeah, I answered the phone when he called and I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm busy doing business.
Well, I called him back and said, if you think that we're flagging your ads, you're barking up the wrong tree. I mean, frankly, to me that seems, maybe I would have done that in second grade or frankly, maybe even eighth grade. I wasn't that mature. But nowadays, I mean, you say what you want. My mentor taught me when I was in my 20s. He says, don't worry about what your competition's doing. Know what you need to do to be successful, and then get out there and do it. And so we hung up. We assured this gentleman that we weren't flagging his ads, and then we hung up and said, hey, wait a minute. He's been flagging us. Lately, we're posting a Help Wanted ad on Craigslist, and we're having problems with that too. I mean, it's a simple Help Wanted ad for entry-level clerical positions, and somebody keeps flagging it. It doesn't have our name there. It's not like they don't like us. I don't know why they're doing that. But if you're wondering where we're going with this, on this other note, apparently we made somebody mad, or maybe they consider themselves a competitor. We post ads on Craigslist to tell people about our services. And if you know us at all, you know we have an awful lot of services, buying, selling, consigning. It just goes on and on, all these specialty auctions and different things that we do. But this person, it's not a matter of them flagging our ads. It's a matter of them spamming us on Craigslist. Adam, would you explain to people who might not know what spamming is?
Well, I mean, spamming is technically actually unsolicited advertisements for something that you probably want nothing to do with. I wouldn't really consider it spamming.
Well, you know, it's not spamming. It's not the word I was thinking. The word is what? Flaming, right?
I don't know.
You don't know that one? Okay, even now you're too old for that. Flaming, I know. I mean, I read this somewhere. Believe me, I don't know. I'm old. But flaming is when, for no good reason, you just get on and just start saying nasty things, usually in capital letters.
Okay,
and you just
yeah.
go, bad, nasty, nasty,
yeah, this
nasty.
Guy is rather aggressive.
He is aggressive. In fact, I keep thinking, I know that sometimes we displease people for different reasons, and sometimes they let us know about it. We do what we can to please them. But we're not going to please everybody. I know that. But, you know, I always figure that anyone who has a legitimate complaint should contact one of our several licensing agencies. We're licensed by the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, license number 16604 and
16643.
643. 16643 is Adam's number.
And even contact us and talk to us about it. This guy obviously never talked to us about it and gave us a chance to defend ourselves.
Yeah, and we're licensed, we're certified by the Texas Department of Public Safety. I don't know the number offhand. We are licensed by the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
All those licenses are on the website.
Yeah, and if we had done something to offend someone regarding firearms, the federal government takes that pretty seriously. And we are voluntarily regulated by the Better Business Bureau. You can go on their site and see there's never even been a formal complaint about us. But this guy has some complaints. I mean, I wish anybody with a complaint would come to us, and if we don't satisfy them, then complain to one of our several licensing agencies. But not this guy. And sure, we could get angry, and we could cry, or we could even flag his ads. But we said, you know, no, we're not doing that. It's a forum. Let him say whatever he wants to say. And we're not here on the radio this morning to defend ourselves. Frankly, we see this as a teaching opportunity. From day one on In the Money Radio, we've been telling people how this business works. What are the components of this business? The percentages, the margins, what are our philosophies? And we thought this was a great teaching opportunity to review one of these repeated posts and to comment on some of the things the gentleman is saying. The one ad that we see the most on Craigslist is called For Stone Oak Jewelry Auction Exchange to Stop Ripping People Off. They give you the runaround on how they can pay so much blah blah blah, then wham, 53% on market value of gold.
I thought the 53% was rather specific, that he had done some kind of calculation. That wasn't just a number that he threw out there, and I figured it out. He forgot to take the purity of the metal into account.
because...
Because I'm never offering as little as 53%.
Right, 14 karat gold is 58.3% pure. So anybody who expects to get a spot price for 14 karat gold, I mean, the spot price is for 24 karat gold. So we're starting to think maybe somehow we made this person an offer and they took it wrong. But it's funny, you know, if you want to talk about profit margins, we do that all the time on this show. We freely admit that our profit margin is never more than 30%. We do larger and larger deals and higher quality deals for lower and lower profit margins. We did some gold bullion deals today for 2%. In fact, one of the buyers asked if that was a good price I was making, and I said, frankly, if you can find someone willing to do a several thousand dollar deal for less than a 2% profit margin, I think you ought to go do business with them. I'm just not willing to do that. But you know, when someone brings us a little broken piece of chain, we may calculate what we can get for it and subtract 30%. When you look at that, that might amount to $12.50 or $14 or $7. And so we're not ashamed to tell you that our margin sometimes is as high as 30%. But 53% of spot, not going to happen at our place, I can tell you that. To continue, he says, you tell them, well, you go offered higher over here, and they go, oh, well, I'll match it to save you the drive. Sketchy very, they say.
Sometimes I'll offer something like $350, for example, and somebody says, oh, well, this other guy offered me $375. And I'll say, well, Phil, for $25, I'm not going to make you drive across town. We're talking about a very small amount of money.
And I'll tell you what I do. I say, $375? No way. I'll then offer you $380 because I don't want you saying that someone else offered the same amount as a jewelry exchange.
But the numbers are never very different from each other.
No, and if we had offered, say, $500 and somebody said, well, down the street they offered me $700, we'd say, well, we'd politely say, have a nice drive down the street. We know what our margins need to be to survive, and we've already cut them as thin as we can. He continues, if you don't want to sell, they try to entice you to do their auctions. Now, he has that exactly backwards. It is our desire to take better merchandise on consignment and sell it for you for several reasons. First of all, when we buy something that's going to go to auction, I don't want to offer you $100 and you sell it for $100 and then we put it in auction. And what if we have a great auction, it sells for $350, $450. You're going to think we did something wrong. So we like to share the risk with you and share the profit with you by becoming partners. And let's put it in the auction. And in order for us to get rich under that scenario, we have to make you even richer. We like that. And the second reason we like consignment, and it was really exemplified by some transactions we're making with a local jeweler here. He was giving us all of his merchandise on consignment. He continues to give us merchandise. And one day he said, look, why don't you just buy this stuff from me at 50 cents on the dollar? And I said, why should we buy it from you? We're getting it for free. When you consign something to us, we just got it for free. We tied up none of our cash. If it sells high, we get a percentage. If it sells low, we get the same percentage. It just amounts to less dollars. But in no case do we lose money. But that doesn't mean we're sticking you with all the risk because, folks, you already own it. So you've already taken the risk. You already own it. We take no additional risk. We just do a good job showing it and trying to get that price as high as we can. So no, if you don't want to sell it, we don't try to entice you to do the auction. If you don't want to do the auction, then we have to negotiate with you to see if we can buy it from you. So this flamer here has it backwards, actually. And then this is kind of funny because he says, then they take 15%. I think what he means is if we put something in the auction on your behalf, we take 15% of the sale price. And again, he has it wrong. We take 30% of the sale price. He can be right, he can be wrong, but right is right and wrong is wrong.
No auction house works on as little as 15% total commission.
Well, you know, we had Billy Ward from Ward Auctions on here. Billy said 25%, and he does not vary. I don't know I don't want to say out loud because, although I think I know, I don't want to say it over the air, but I don't think anybody in town works for, well, nobody in town works for 15%. Although the odd thing is this, that under many scenarios, we'll work for 10% or less at auction. Because think about it, if you give me a high value coin, and we sell coins, we sold a coin once for $50,000, why would I have not been willing to handle that for 10%? Because, you know, $5,000 for what amounts to a couple minutes worth of work, that's fine with me, ladies and gentlemen. I'd be happy to do that for you too. So this man on Craigslist thinks that 15% is excessive, and
he says he's comparing it to eBay.
Well, it's funny. I don't know what percentage eBay takes, but I bet you that on the lower price merchandise, it's probably something like 15%. But
PayPal
but
too.
And then there's PayPal, but on. You go ahead and sell it on eBay. You have to do all the work. When someone drops something with us, they can just say, bye, I hope it goes high, and if you screw it up, I'm going to call one of your licensing agencies, and they can go home and have a nice day. So, and then he complains that then we tell you you might get more through the auction than what we're willing to pay for it. And the fact here is you might get more for it at the auction than what we're willing to pay for it. I mean, I don't know why he thinks that there's something wrong with that. But in any case... he says, yeah, then they try to say, oh, nothing to bid, but only proxy, but proxy bid charges you. When you bid online, our online trading platform is proxybid.com. And for our Saturday night auctions, we have a 15% buyer's premium that will be added to your purchases. A good part of that, if not most of that, goes to ProxyBid themselves. And to our ProxyBid technician who operates the software for us, and for the fact that we have to ship that merchandise.
And the credit card.
But what he doesn't take into effect is that we have no buyer's premium in the gallery, and two-thirds of our merchandise sells in the gallery. So the 15% buyer's premium on ProxyBid, when you factor in the fact there's none in the gallery, is really more like a 5% buyer's premium. Our good friend Billy Ward, 10% buyer's premium. And I know Gene Vogt at Vogt Auctions is publishing a 13% buyer's premium. So any way you look at it, we're not too far out of the ballpark, and I think we might actually be in the infield here. And then our writer says that that still doesn't mean you don't charge 15% to list the item. I don't really know what he means by that. But then he says the point basically is they're scum who take advantage of wealthy Stone Oak people that aren't, A-R-N-T, no punctuation, people that aren't educated about what they have. Please educate yourself before going over there. The father-son combo will swindle you.
Now, I think that means you and me.
That's me. Yeah, I think I'm the father in that combo there. You know, it's funny. Please educate yourself. Allow us to help you. We're here every week trying to help you get educated.
And we'll go toe-to-toe with anybody.
Then he says, email me. I can tell you 10 shops that pay more than them. Well, first of all, I sincerely doubt that, but I wish somebody would respond to that and then find out where those shops are and let me know, because I don't think that can be done. We never say and never believe anybody, please, who says we always pay more for everything than anybody else does. What we say is we tend to be the high buyer. Please shop around. That's what we do. We never sell anything for the first bid. We're an auction company. We always want to hear someone going to bid higher. But we also say, please let us be one of the three or four or however many people who is bidding on your merchandise, because I think we're going to make you happy, but not always. But in any case, we want you to be educated. Once you're educated, I think you're going to appreciate the Jewelry Exchange a little bit more. In any case, if you do find this ad and get his list of shops that pay more than we do, I'd sure like to see that list. And then he ends with saying, how can they pay more and have such a big shop in Stone Oak? That beep is not free. It uses an expletive there. Well, the fact is, shop around and find out if we pay more. We find that we tend to pay more. And then shop around and see that if you can buy any of the merchandise that we sell anywhere else cheaper than you can buy it at one of our auctions. I think not. So I think that as far as this email goes, we've addressed all of this gentleman's concerns and take issue with almost all of them. We'd invite him to call us. Or come in and see us. Maybe we'll even get them on this show. If you're listening out there, get on the show and tell us what it is you're so upset about. You know, there's a couple other versions of this ad on Craigslist, too. They say, hey, do our auctions, get more, pay less. Well, smart guys, how does that make sense? How is the seller supposed to get more when the buyer is supposed to pay less? It's all about profit margins. Retail jewelers have margins of 100 to 200%. They call it keystoning and double keystoning. We know a lot of the gold buyers, especially toward Midtown, I won't name any names, are offering as little as 20% of spot, 50% of spot is possible. And some of the people advertising heavily on TV, their first offer will be 50%. And if you play it just right, you'll get them all the way up to 70% of spot, which is where we start. We don't end there. We start there for just the smallest quantities and go up from there. It's called profit margins. Our margins are slim.
We never work on more than a 30% margin. I'll say that all the time.
Don't trust these guys. Look at their review sites. All of them are the same, except posted different dates. Like, this isn't sketchy at all. I really don't know what that means, because when we see our reviews, say on Google, I think we have 18 or 19 reviews. And it's funny, in this country, you're innocent till proven guilty. I mean, I can't prove I didn't write those reviews. How do you prove you didn't write a review? But in any case, we didn't write those. And that's what's wrong with Craigslist, if you ask me. A bunch of children on the playground with no parents around. The music means we're up against a hard break. We're not going anywhere, though. We'll be right back with Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates to talk about pirates and pearls. Don't go away. You're listening to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Our guest today, one of our favorites, San Antonio's gemologist, Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates. Welcome, Rudy. As always, thanks for coming on In the Money.
Well, thank you for the invitation, and I appreciate coming back and being able to review some of the items that there's of interest.
And I just want to remind everybody, you joined us for our Diamond Show a couple months ago. Welcome back. And would you please remind everybody what you do at Pena & Associates?
Pena & Associates is a business where we do appraisal and jewelry services. We are very involved in doing estate appraisals for the federal government, different agencies, Drug Enforcement, Internal Revenue Service, Marshal, U.S. Marshals on confiscations. We prepare documents and have them processed through the courts in order for the courts to release the items for liquidations. We do general appraisals for the purpose of getting items that you need to have appraised and added to your personal property policies, and pretty much anything that is in the area of appraising we are involved in.
And we were talking a little bit about this before the show, and you had mentioned going to Chicago for some refresher courses. Is that right?
Yeah, I will be in Chicago for the 21st through the 28th, and I am a member of the International Society of Appraisers. And every 5 years, we have to take a requalification course. This is not the type of membership where you just pay your dues and you're a right. lifetime member.
Some pretty serious business, this organization.
It is, and they pretty much keep us up to date on all the federal government regulations, documentation, report methodology, and so forth. And so every 5 years we have to go up and qualify. So
we were talking in the green room before this show that you're talking about the caliber and the credentials of a lot of the appraisals that you see written by people who really don't have this certification, don't have these credentials, and that can create quite a bit of problem for a lot of people in the event that there's a loss, correct?
Absolutely, and a lot of people sometimes place more emphasis on the cost of the appraisal as opposed to what the credentials are, and they don't really worry about it until it becomes necessary to use that documentation for a claim, and when they find that the information is not prepared properly for them to be able to justify their claim, they kind of wish they had paid a little more to get the proper documentation.
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, you do get what you pay for.
And Rudy, I've been to your office. I've seen the wall. It's just covered in certifications, and you have an awful lot of education. Tell everybody, what are your qualifications?
Well, as a member of the International Society of Appraisers, they require to take several courses to just become a member. Then you have to take additional courses to be able to become an accredited member. And then eventually, with time, you get to be what is called a CAP, or a Certified Appraiser of Personal Property. That is the highest level of membership with the International Society of Appraisers, and it's quite difficult to get. I think in the whole United States, a CAP certified individual with a background of jewelry is in the hundreds. It's a very limited amount of people with that type of credential. So.
And I know you also, you're a gemologist, you're from GIA, is that right?
I was fortunate enough to attend the Gemological Institute in residence and got my certification as a graduate gemologist through the GIA, yes.
And regarding the GIA, they have an entire Pearl program, right?
That was an additional course that I took on top of the residence courses, which was a correspondence course strictly on pearls.
Wow. And the reason why we're talking about pearls today is there is a lot of misinformation out there. People don't really understand what they have. Even some of the resources I see are incorrect. And I just want to clear some things up with you. Do you write appraisals for pearls?
Yes.
And I'm going to ask some basic questions here. Can you tell us a little bit about what are pearls and maybe how they're made and why are they made?
Well, first of all, there's a large assortment of pearls, you've got freshwater pearls, you've got Akoya pearls, you've got Mabe pearls, you got South Sea pearls, you got Tahitian pearls, you got synthetic pearls, you got plastic pearls, you got Majorcas, and we can go on and on.
And Rudy, let me interrupt. Exactly what percentage of these pearls are found by pirates at the bottom of the ocean?
I was going to tell you earlier, I can help you with the pearls, but not the pirates. So.
Well, that used to be it, right? But that's not. I mean, it used to be if you found a pearl in an oyster, you had a pearl, and that was how you got pearls.
In those days, they basically didn't have a way of testing them, so if it looked like a pearl, and obviously the synthetic process hadn't been developed, so pretty much everything was pearls.
And nowadays, of all these different types of pearls, are any of them just found naturally, or all of them produced?
The Akoya pearl, which is the most common pearl, that's mostly what you see in most of the jewelry stores, are actually called cultured pearls. And a cultured pearl is any type of pearl that has been assisted by the process of a man inserting a mother of pearl bead into a oyster, and then the oyster will apply the nacre that is covering the pearl and use that process to establish the pearl. Now, the value of a pearl is based on the length of time it takes to develop. Pearls in Akoyas usually go from anywhere from 2 millimeters to 9 millimeters, and it takes quite some time. A 9 millimeter can take anywhere from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years to develop.
Really?
And you will have a large comparison of Akoya pearls, which are cultured saltwater pearls, to what is commonly known as freshwater pearls.
But you said that they're assisted by man in their production of the pearl.
That's correct.
And, I mean, do people dive to the bottom of the ocean, or are we talking about shallow beds in a warehouse somewhere?
No, actually, they take the pearls and the oysters, and they're actually done in labs where they open the pearl slightly and are, with a very gentle process, insert a mother-of-pearl bead into the nucleus of the pearl.
You mean of the mollusk?
The mollusk, and that actually is what starts generating the process of coating that mother of bead pearl.
Now, mother of pearl is what now?
Mother of pearl bead is actually a bead, and the largest producer of those beads, by the way, is in the United States. They actually produce these beads, and they call them mother of pearl beads. And that's what they use to go ahead and start the process of the cultured
pearls. And they're like carved out of the inside of mollusk shells.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they take these pearls, they actually put them in, and the longevity of the pearl being, or should I say the bead being in that pearl, is what actually starts determining what the price of that pearl is going to be.
Does a round bead produce a round pearl, and an irregularly shaped bead produce an irregularly shaped bead?
Yes. The round beads are usually used for the purpose of creating round beads. Some of the pearls that are kind of out of shape are called Baroque pearls. Mm. Those basically have different growth patterns that are created by the oyster itself in movement, or whatever the case might be in that.
But what I understand too is that sometimes instead of mother of pearl, they'll actually use some flesh from another mollusk and put that in there.
No, actually that's a two-part process. The bead is added on, and then that little flesh is added to the bead to create the process.
Oh, well, interesting. I didn't know that.
Why would they do that? I don't get it. There's a bead, and then they add some flesh and that kind
of... No, it's just a little piece of flesh or a little piece of that's added onto the pearl to start the nucleation of the bead.
Because the shellfish just won't get going until that's
right. It's
done.
A growth process that's actually done by that little... Oh. Cloning, I guess you could say.
That's,
you know,
cool.
But
interesting. And so you were talking about a little bit about how long it takes. I understand that you could have a bead and put it in for just a very short amount of time, just long enough to give it a very thin layer, and that's still a pearl, right? I mean, you could culture one in less than a year, is that correct?
You can, and obviously one of the pricing strategies, or should I say pricing processes that you use, is you check the thickness of the nacre on the pearl. The process basically is you set a percentage as to the shape of the pearl. You also check the orient, which is kind of the iridescence type of finish that it has on the pearl, the nacre thickness, and you take all of these percentages and add them up, and then from that you determine what quality the pearl is. Based on that quality is the assessment of the value of that pearl.
I wanted to ask about how you can determine a thickness. I mean, of course, it has to be some unobtrusive way. My daughter-in-law, Adam's wife, is Ween, and she's our pearl person. She's completed some GIA coursework. But she's a native Vietnamese speaker, and she just didn't want to come on the show. She doesn't want to talk on the radio. But I've seen her holding them up to the light, kind of like I always think of the farmer with the egg up to the candle. I don't even know why they do that.
They're somewhat transparent.
Actually, as far as the nacre thickness, you can actually look through the hole, and you will actually see a separation of the bead and the nacre.
So I see.
And you can actually tell the thickness by that. The nacre thickness can go anywhere from half a millimeter to a millimeter. So.
Oh, that's a lot. And the nacre is adhered to that bead in a way where it's not going to just flake off?
No, there's a process that they add, what is called a conchylon, which is like an adhesive process that's used to hold whatever it applies to.
Spell
that pearl.
No, I'm just kidding.
P-I-R-A-T-E-Pirate.
I never heard that word before.
At the GIA pearl grading lab, I went to the lab in New York, in the Diamond District, and they actually had an X-ray machine where people that really want their pearls analyzed, are they natural, if there's some kind of bead in there, or what kind of bead, they'll actually X-ray every individual pearl in the strand.
That is actually the only way that you can actually assign a natural term to a pearl, is if you have an X-ray that proves that the pearl, in essence, is a natural pearl. Now, keep in mind that the difference between a cultured pearl and a natural pearl is that a cultured pearl is assisted by man, whereas the natural pearl can easily start by an irritant that got into the oyster, and that little particle will start getting coated. And if you think that a cultured pearl takes time to get to the point of being able to be used as a pearl, a natural pearl takes much, much more time than that. And so the pricing, obviously, of a natural pearl to a man-made or a cultured pearl is definitely a substantial amount.
Well, you mentioned a number of types of pearls. A natural pearl, could it be any one of those types, too? Or?
Mostly in the most of the natural pearls will be into the Akoya pearls, which is the most common type of oyster that develops that.
And that's a freshwater.
No, that's
salt
water.
That is a saltwater.
Saltwater, yes.
And to find those, I mean, it's just hit and miss, right?
Yes. Now, those are when you have the divers that go out into these areas that are known to have the oysters that develop that. And they basically get the, that's where they find them. Now, earlier you mentioned something about the diving. The pearls are in, the mother of bead pearls are inserted, then they're farmed. They are actually hung into racks into the different levels of the water. And then when they actually start pulling them out, they start pulling out these racks when they have matured, and they start pulling the pearls out. And so there's a difference there of what the pearl divers, as far as looking for the free-laying type of oysters, and those are the naturals.
When they harvest the cultured pearl then, do they kill the oyster, or do they just start all over again?
Some survive, some don't. So it really depends on the process, how long they've been in the water, how the different temperature variances that they've gone through, and so forth.
So women who don't want to wear fur should probably also not wear pearls. Same principle, right?
Yes.
Adam likes to raise the point that someone might throw red paint on a lady wearing fur,
wearing pearls.
But they never throw red paint on a biker wearing a leather jacket. Why is that? I don't know why
might
that
be
is.
By the way that the size that you have.
Now, you mentioned a number of different kind of pearls, and you didn't mention Mikimoto pearls. Why is that?
Well, actually, Mikimoto is like the largest owner of pearls. Mikimoto is like to pearls what De Beers is to diamonds. So they pretty much control the entire pearl market.
And it's not a type of pearl; it's a brand name of a pearl.
It's a brand name of a pearl, but Mikimoto obviously is the person who developed the process of the culturing of the pearls, and he is the man that has brought the pearls to where they are today.
But he's really just perfected this farming technique.
And he's, yes.
Now,
yes.
We can't help but notice that when people bring us Mikimoto pearls, they seem aware of what they have, and that these pearls do seem really well matched color-wise, size-wise.
Yeah, I was just in New York recently, and I saw, I went to a Mikimoto store, and the pearls were gorgeous. I went across the street to, they just look alive. I went across the street to Tiffany, and they're known for having very nice diamonds and very well-finished jewelry, but I was looking at some of their strands of pearls, and they just look kind of dead after just looking at the Mikimoto pearls. I don't know how else to explain it, that the luster just wasn't there.
In your experience, Rudy, is a Mikimoto really the top of the line, or is there even better than that?
No, Mikimoto is the top of the line. Obviously, that's in that category. When you start getting into salt, into the South Sea pearls, and you start getting into the Tahitian pearls and so forth, and that's a different category, but obviously Mikimoto is well known into the Akoyas. Not that they don't buy or work into the Tahitians and the South Sea pearls, but they're cultured in a different area and a different process.
Yeah, we horse trade just about everything, but sometimes we have to come up with merchandise for a customer who wants to buy it from us because they know that we don't have the markup that a retail jeweler does. And we've had to come up with some Tahitian and South Sea pearls that individually can just be hundreds of dollars each, and I suppose they could be more than that too, right?
Yeah, the pricing of them is definitely much, much higher. You can have a strand of pearls that can easily be into $12,000, $15,000, $18,000, $30,000 with the blink of an eye is just in the size. In order for a South Sea pearl to be a South Sea pearl, it has to be larger than a 10-millimeter pearl.
Right.
Oh yeah, all the time we see pretty much any pearl that has kind of a gray or black color. They say, yep, it's a Tahitian pearl. And I know an awful lot of these are not Tahitian pearls.
Okay, I want to look at the other side of this equation now. We bring in 18-inch strands of freshwater pearls from China. They're knotted, and they have a clasp on them, and they actually exist. And Rudy, it's $2 a strand. What are we bringing in?
Originally, the freshwater pearl was actually started in Japan. China has taken over the market. One of the big differences in the freshwater and the cultured pearl is that a cultured pearl usually will grow only one pearl per oyster. The freshwater pearls can bring anywhere from 50 to 75 pearls within one oyster. So when you look at the production, obviously you have a lot more of a production in the freshwater. And they have perfected the process to where it does take a trained eye to separate the freshwater from the salt water. And so there, that is one of the reasons the pricing is so much lower in freshwater, because the production is so much higher than the saltwater.
Well, I didn't know that aspect. I knew another component of the pricing equation, and that's that when I had my galleries in California, we also had a consumer products division doing business with Walmart. We had a lot of merchandise produced in China, and there are factories there clearly where people are making $2 or $3 a day. So I guess if you're getting a bunch of pearls from one shell, and the person harvesting them and drilling them and stringing them is making $2 or $3, that's how you get a $2 string of pearls.
That's how we're able to give them away to the young ladies when they come.
We just give them away. It's and the mothers say, "Oh, are you sure?" Say, "Yeah, we're real nice guys." You know, we're starting to run out of time here. Before we do, Rudy, if somebody wants to talk to you about pearls or really just about anything else, I think our listeners can hear your knowledgeable about so much about jewelry. How could they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with us at our office number, which is 210-349-4367, or they can reach us on our website at rudypena.com.
Good. And I wanted to ask you if you know the answer to today's. Don't tell me. Do you know the answer to today's trivia
No,
quiz?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. It's a good.
I'd like to add one thing more in the freshwater pearl area, that I had a lady that came into the office and brought a pearl, and she told me that she had pulled it out of the Llano River. And I said, I don't think that is true. And it actually turned out to be true. There are oysters in the Llano River that produce pearls. Yeah. And so I was taken back a little bit by that. But I had to research that, and I actually found out that it was a true statement.
I tell people all the time at the Jewelry Exchange, there's 13 of us. Between us, we know everything. But boy, every day there's something we didn't know, right? That's so good. Rudy, as always. Oh, Adam, you have a question?
I've got one more question for you. I think it's important. How can you differentiate real pearls from imitation pearls?
It's well, I'll tell you what, it's a very simple process, and I actually tell people I'm going back in the lab to check them. And basically what you do is you take the pearl, you rub it against your tooth. If it has a sandy texture to it, it is likely a cultured pearl. If it has a rubbery texture to it, then it is a synthetic pearl.
But I was hoping you were going to say that, because I didn't want to know that I was ruining my teeth and exposing myself to disease for nothing.
No, but I don't do it in front of the people. I say, well, let me go check it back in the lab, and as soon as I get in the back room, I rub it against my tooth and I say, well, it's a synthetic.
I say, what's that man doing in that parking lot? And they turn around.
Yeah.
I rub it on my teeth.
I say, I'm about to do something that's disgusting. If you don't want to see it, turn your head. Rudy, any questions about pearls that we should have asked you that we didn't ask you?
I'd like to make a couple of points to people on maintenance of their pearls. Number one is that a lot of people start seeing a discolorations on the pearls, and that is not a process of the pearls. Basically, what that is accumulation of cosmetics, sprays, perfumes, and so forth. And the easiest way to remove that is by taking some non-abrasive shampoo or cleaning solution and putting it into the solution, put the pearls into the water and just let them set there, and then with your hands just rub the accumulation of cosmetics off of it, and then when you rinse them, take them out of the rinse and lay them down on a towel. Don't hang them because they'll stretch. Another thing I'd like to advise you is that anytime you take pearls in for restringing, always ask for pearls to be restrung with knots. And the purpose of that is that you want to avoid the pearls rubbing against each other to create damage. And the other reason is that in case the string breaks, you have one pearl come off instead of all of them coming down.
True.
And whenever you take a strand in, never measure the strand. Always count the pearls. The reason for that is that you have been wearing the strand that's going to be probably, that was originally 18, now it's 19 inches because it stretched a little bit. But when you count the pearls and you get your strand back, you want to make sure that the same number of pearls you're getting back on that strand. So the measurement is not important. It's more important to count the pearls.
Interesting.
Excellent. You know, Rudy, thank you so much. We're going to take a short commercial break. Then we'll come back and answer some email questions on In the Money with our special guest, Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates, and Adam and me, David Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Adam from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio, introducing our weekday James Avery Auctions with 1,000 pieces of estate James Avery jewelry sold to the highest bidder with no minimums or reserves. New and retired designs at up to 80% off. This is a perfect opportunity to stock up on hard-to-find pieces. It's easy to register and bid online right now at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. Auctions start every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evening at 7 o'clock. Also join us each Saturday at 7 p.m. for our live auctions in Stone Oak, featuring even more designer jewelry from Rolex, Tiffany, Pandora, John Hardy, David Yurman, and more, all guaranteed to be authentic. It's all happening at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction, Texas License Number 16604, Member Better Business Bureau. Visit jewelryexchangeandauction.com and join us every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for In the Money right here on KLUP. James Avery is a registered trademark of James Avery Craftsman Incorporated.
You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, what do I do with it? Our guest today, Rudy Pena of Pena & Associates. We're talking about pearls and pirates, mostly about pearls. We do have some email questions, and frankly, in the last couple minutes, you guys pretty much dealt with these, but I just want to read one of them anyway, even though you kind of already answered it because I like it so much. Barbara M. wants to know, my mother left me a big box full of jewelry, and I don't know what's real or not. Can I really tell if it's really a pearl by rubbing it on my teeth? And isn't that dirty? And is there any easier way to tell? And Rudy has told us, yeah, you can tell. That grittiness will tell you that that's a natural pearl.
And yes, it is dirty.
Yes, it is dirty. We also had a question here from Judy who wanted to know, she says, I have what I thought were real pearls, but some of them are cracking open. It looks like some kind of shell. What's that all about? Is that still a real pearl, right?
No, usually that's that's usually the process of the synthetic pearl. And what happens is a lot of times the body moisture and so forth starts loosening the adhesive that's or the hold of the pearl to the coating, and it starts separating, and it'll actually start breaking down.
And I have one more quick question. Roberto asks, we tried to sell some pearls, but no one wanted to pay very much. We're thinking of donating them somewhere and taking a tax deduction. How much can I deduct for them? And Rudy, you have about 45 seconds to answer a very complicated question.
A lot of people think that if you paid $10,000 for a necklace and that you're going to be donating it, that you can deduct a total amount of $10,000. That is not the case. What you are able to donate is what is called fair market value, which basically is what is a base of being able to determine what an arm's length transaction sale would be. So that's all you can get.
Rudy, thanks so much. We're out of time for this week. That was Rudy Pena from Pena & Associates. Thanks for joining us, Rudy. Always a pleasure. Next week, 7 a.m. on Saturday, the Great Estate Debate, Estate Sale versus Auction. Which should you do? We'll have Janet Weissenhut from Charlotte's Antiques, another one of our favorites. They do estate sales. We do auctions. Let's see who wins. I'm much bigger than she is. If you have any questions about unwanted valuables, call us at the Jewelry Exchange or email questions to questions@inthemoneyradio.com. We would love to hear from you. We'll answer every single question. We'll answer the best ones on the air. We hope to see you all tonight at our live auction at the Jewelry Exchange in Stone Oak. We hope you'll join us again next week for In the Money, right here on KLUP. Thanks for joining us this morning, and have a great week.